Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the most exciting hour and a half on internet radio. This is ScaryCast. And we are so excited. We've got a great show tonight, probably one of the best shows that we've ever had. I want to start out by introducing our co-hosts, Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling. How are you doing, Papa Stro?
Like Tony the Tiger, I'm great. How are you guys?
That is perfect. And speaking of the guy that was just laughing, the amazing one, the Amazing Velvet from Ravenel, South Carolina. How are you doing, Amazing Velvet?
Doing great. I hope everybody else is. I'm ready for a fantastic show.
We are glad. We are absolutely glad to have you here. And, of course, we've got our man from Hollywood, Devin Tate. What's up in Hollywood tonight, buddy?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me. Just thankful that we have a little bit warmer weather here than some of you may have.
Yeah, well, now let me ask you this, and I want to use this as a segue. What's going on in terms of COVID out there? What's going on there with, are we in quarantine or what's going on out there?
Well, we're not necessarily in quarantine, but a lot of things are still closed, and we still have a lot of high numbers, so not too much has changed other than there are a lot of people going out to take advantage of the outdoor dining now, you know, that we have here in California. So I personally haven't done that, but I've been out walking and I've seen that they're pretty busy. So a lot of people are out and about.
All right. Well, that's great. We're glad you're able to get back to some kind of normalcy. Tonight we've got a very special guest. He's actually one of my favorite guests that I've ever had. And he's actually going to become, starting next week, he's going to become a co-host. But tonight he's a guest. It is Dr. Trey Donaway. He's a surgeon. He's a medical practitioner. And he's an all-around great guy. And he will talk to me. When I call him up, he'll answer the phone. So that's probably pretty good. So anyway, Dr. Trey Donaway, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, John. I've had a great week. I got to visit my son. I haven't seen him in 18 months. I got on one of those high-pressurized aluminum tubes full of people, which I haven't done since March, because I've received both vaccines. I'm now 3 weeks out from my second dose of the Moderna vaccine. We ate out at two restaurants so far this week. And it's very nice to be back in circulation to a degree.
Well, I can imagine, and that kind of has a lot to do with our topic tonight. Our topic tonight is coronavirus, truth, lies, and conspiracy theories. You and I this morning had probably one of the best conversations I've ever had with a friend of mine. We talked for an hour and a half about coronavirus and what is going on, and especially the conspiracy theory part. That's actually why I called you. I sent you an email last night, and you were kind enough to check it out, and we had a good talk about it. But what I'd like for you to do to start us off is tell us what is going on in your opinion, because while you're not a virologist or whatever, you are a medical practitioner, and you have seen COVID firsthand, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's been an interesting phase because I don't actively have an active practice. I work in a nursing home. I go once a week. That's all I do medically. But in a nursing home, that was kind of like ground zero for a lot of the COVID problems. And we have had deaths in our nursing home. Fortunately, very few compared to a lot of nursing homes. We've just had one confirmed immediate death from COVID, but it does have long-lasting effects on some of our patients. Just to give you a little background, in our assisted care unit, we had 16 people, 15 acquired COVID, We think it came from a patient who was getting dialysis, and the dialysis nurse was positive. This is when you could actually track where they came from. And then that patient brought it into an assisted living area. This is where people live together. They watch TV together. They eat together. They're always together. Even in their rooms, most of the patients, well, they're not patients, they're residents, but most of the residents share a room. And sometimes they're up to three roommates total in a room. So these people live in close proximity. As no surprise, if you are indoors with people that are that close with you, you're going to get COVID. And 15 out of the 16 people got COVID. Six ended up in the hospital, and all of them came back. We had another outbreak on the nursing home side of the building. And remarkably, those people that acquired COVID on the assisted living area, which is just separated by a corridor to the nursing home, it didn't spread beyond that. It really didn't. So that told me it wasn't quite as contagious as I was led to believe, reading sensational journalism. And it also told me that even though certainly our six people in assisted living and our people in the nursing home are fragile, COVID is seemingly random about who it will really affect in a profound way or kill. And other people who you thought, well, wow, they've got one foot on a banana peel right there and the other one in the grave. they just acted like nothing happened to them. I mean, it was just, they had a little virus and that was it. So it really is a very variable disease process. And part of the problems which lead to lies, truths, and conspiracies is that it is variable. And when you ask somebody in medicine, what do you do? The real answer is it depends. And then it gets complicated, and people take voids in knowledge, and they fill it with conspiracy theories because they're seeking something. And if you ask somebody that actually pays attention, a lot of the answers should be simply, I don't know. But nobody likes to admit ignorance, so people fill that void. So I have seen a gamut of behavior on human sides that probably is the same behavior when smallpox was ravaging, to today when we had COVID ravaging. And there are certainly lies, and there are people that are broadcasting things intentionally that are not true. And while I love the internet, I mean, the internet is my best friend. It's my information source. You always have to be careful of who you're paying attention to. Lord knows, if you pay attention to politicians, they're going to lie to you about anything at any time or slant their perspective to please the potential voters in a room. I mean, that's just standard operating behavior. But with this COVID, some people have taken advantage of that crisis to either further political gains, or they're trying to cover things up because of political gains. I won't continue on because I could get on the soapbox for an hour and a half, which I'm sure we'll do, but I really want to find out.
Oh, we got all the time in the world. Help yourself.
I want to find out what you're thinking and any questions you might have, because your listening audience might very well have the same one.
I mean, and I agree so much with what you're saying, is that people – they're curious. They want to know, but they don't know where to get the correct information. Now, the reason that we're having this show is because I've got somebody that I really trust. That's you, Dr. Trey. And people want to know what's going on. Now, it was really funny. I've got to tell everybody about a conversation we had this morning. A mini conversation, and I'm going to call you out on it, but in a very kind way, because I believe that I had COVID last March, and your response was, yeah, well, you probably did, and that shut me up, and I've always felt like, yes, I probably had it. And then today you said, you know, sometimes when you're a doctor and someone wants to tell you that they've had COVID, you may as well just go ahead and agree with them, because what good's it going to do to disagree?
And you know, Trey, I really like that remark of yours, because I don't know if you remember telling me that, but you're 100% right. I felt like I had it. So telling me that I didn't have it, I mean, what good was it going to do?
It doesn't do any good. The only thing I would add to that is, I mean, and I've heard this from, I can't tell you how many people. Somebody told me that they think they had COVID in November. They were sure they had COVID, and they checked with their doctor, and their doctor said they probably did have COVID too. That was in November. You didn't have COVID in November. I mean, maybe they did. So I'm not going to say absolutely you did not and then argue with them all day long. The only thing I say to that person is, well, perhaps you did. But remember, you might be able to get it twice. So you might as well continue to wear your mask and pretend like you didn't have it just in case you did. But unless you've had a positive test or antibodies, that's the ultimate goal, to get antibodies, then I'm not going to believe it. But if you want to believe it, that's okay. As long as you pretend like you can still get it again, it really doesn't matter because you can get it twice. I mean, that's a fact. So it, but there's no point in arguing with the patient when they're convinced of something, but you just have to, you have to be gentle with people. You have to respect what they think, even if they're wrong, but it's okay.
Well, all I've got to say is you were so kind about all of that. And that's why we're friends, is because, you know what, I always said, well, maybe I didn't, but he said I might could have had it. And so, well, that's okay. It's made me happy for almost a year. So I do appreciate you pandering me, and I understand why. And it really was, it probably was the best thing for me. So I wanted to say,
well,
thank
it makes
you
for an interesting, you're welcome. And it makes an interesting topic at a cocktail party where you're having masks on and 6 feet separated. You know, I probably had COVID last year, but, you know, we don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure we did. And everybody would go, oh, wow, what's it like? And then you can tell your horror story of having a cold. And everybody go, wow, you were lucky you didn't die. And you say, well, yeah. So, interesting story.
it was. And thank you. And by the way, of course, we now have the queen of scary cast, Robin McCray. Robin, how are you doing?
I am good. I'm so sorry I'm late, guys. Had a little bit of a water emergency out here, so I was a little bit busy.
Is that
That's
frozen
okay.
Pipe,
We're
Robin?
Just glad to have you.
Yeah, we just a little bit of flooding.
Yeah.
I'm going to build an ark for
the
animals.
Day.
I think that's the safest thing.
Been there, done that. It can get a little whatever. Well, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to open this up to our panelists and ask them, do they have a question for Dr. Trey Donaway, who is, in my opinion, he is a very knowledgeable person. He's a surgeon. He treats a lot of people. While he says he's not the world expert on virology, but he is certainly somebody. He knows enough about COVID to give us some answers. And, all right, I'm going to first of all pick on, is everybody ready? I'm going to pick on Devin Tate first. What questions do you have about COVID that you would like to ask Dr. Trey Donaway? And then Papa Stroh's next. All right, Devin, what have you got?
Sure. Well, my question, I have not received my vaccine yet. But I am looking forward to it. I've signed up on our state website to be notified when it's my turn. But with all these variants that, you know, you hear about different variants and different mutations of it, what's the chances that we're going to have to continually get more different types of shots for different strains of COVID?
Well, the answer is we've got to wait and see. And that's no answer for anybody that really wants an answer. But that is the truth. Here's how it works. When you get a vaccine, the vaccine is, especially with the mRNA variety, it is targeting a certain part of that virus. So imagine the virus is an elephant. So if you targeted the trunk of the elephant as your receptor site, as what your allergens are going to respond to on the trunk of the elephant, that means they don't respond to the leg, they don't respond to the ears, they don't respond to the tail, they just respond to the trunk. So if you have a mutant that changes its morphology of its tail, it's not going to matter to the vaccine that you took. It's not going to matter to your antibodies because they still recognize the trunk and it'll neutralize it. That's the idea. However, if the trunk mutates, then it might not be as effective, or it might altogether not work. If all of a sudden you were to lose the trunk on the mutant virus, there wouldn't be any recognition at all. So until they look at the different variants and see where those are and then collect the data, it's all data-driven. And if you're listening to somebody who has not derived their decisions, think of it as opinion. That's all. Unless, of course, they're a politician, and then it's almost always opinion because, again, it's politically slanted. And that's where some of the lies come in. When you look at international studies, I mean, what is the – first of all, here's a simple question. This is a really simple question, isn't it? What is the mortality rate of people with COVID? How many people die if they get COVID? Well, the answer is it depends. If, according to the statistics that I'm reading today, if you are 0 to 19 years of age, your chance of dying from COVID is 0.003. Pretty small. If you're greater than 70 years of age, it's 5.4%. If you're between 50 and 69, it's 0.5%. And if you're between 20 and 45, it's 0.02%. So you can see it definitely gets worse as you get older. So that will determine if you have an older population, like Japan, you should have a higher number. Well, Japan's is 1.7, and according to the data I just read today, the U.S. is 1.8. If you live in Yemen, then your chance of death is 28.3%. And if you live in North Korea, evidently, according to the government, North Korea doesn't have COVID. So, you know, the death rate would be zero because they just don't have it. So those are more lies that get thrown into the mix that confuses people. So even on a simple question of what's the death rate, it depends on the age, it depends on the country, it depends on the reporting standards, it depends on how they track this, how they determine what is a COVID death. Go to Washington State, ask them, or go to New York State and ask them data from nursing home deaths. What percentage of people in nursing homes that had COVID died? Well, you can see what happens when politicians get involved, because they're going to massage the numbers or they're going to tweak it one way or another. And it can be a huge difference in statistics because for whatever reason, people fudge numbers. I think I think New York State certainly did with nursing home stuff. So it's just difficult to track down. But as far as, you know, your chances of having a mutant virus and what effect that's going to be, hopefully it won't change the trunk of the elephant that much, which is actually the spike protein in most of them, but it won't change the trunk morphology that much. So some mutants will still be as effective with your vaccine as other ones, and that trunk changes, though, if the spike changes and the protein composition changes significantly, then it might be less effective or maybe not effective at all. But that doesn't prevent you from getting that vaccine because they're going to have multiple variants. And the whole idea is to just squash them all down. And if most people are spared death, then that's a good thing. I figure, I mean, if I go out and about, even with both of my vaccines on board, and it's been on board for 3 weeks now, I can still get COVID because it's only like 95% effective. However, if I do get COVID, hopefully it will be a mild case and or asymptomatic case and won't kill me. Of course, if I'm carrying asymptomatic COVID, am I spreading that to other people, or is it not enough of a viral load to really spread out too far? And again, we don't know because there's not enough data on this. This is all a new thing. That's why they kept saying a novel coronavirus, because it's new. And because it's new, nobody really knows. Another thing about medicine, you might not know this, but in surgery we have a saying. If there's more than one way to fix a problem, then nobody knows what the hell to do. And I think that's the case today with coronavirus, because there's all sorts of different approaches. Do you close a society down and suffer economic consequences, or do you open it up to a degree? Or, you know, what I find most interesting is that they slammed the door pretty shut in South Carolina for a brief period of time. But since the big spike we've had over the holidays, which is entirely predictable, I mean, they were spot on with that, but it makes sense. It's wintertime. You're indoors. You are having a lot of travel from one area of the country to another area of the country. You have more gatherings at the holiday time than you do at other times of the year, perhaps. And you're indoors a lot. So all of those factors are going to come into play, and you're going to see a spike in the numbers. But then again, the spike was up, but yet after the holidays, there's still, in some places, they didn't shut down anything. Where they shut it down before when the rates were lower. But again, that's politically driven, which is driven by a lot more than just, you know, what a physician would do, what a health professional would do. I mean, if it was up to me, yeah, everybody would pretty much stay closed down, but you can't do that from an economic perspective. So as far as variants go, get the vaccine. It's going to protect you against most of those variants. And even if it doesn't fully protect you, hopefully it will mitigate the degree of illness that you might get if you did acquire one of these variants, or if you were in the 5% of people that was not treated by the vaccine. Man, I had to build you a clock in order to tell you the time, didn't I? I'm sorry.
No, that was a great answer.
I appreciate your insight. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. All right, Papa Stroh, do you have a question for Dr. Trey,
first question is, why are you even here? I mean, you're such a learned doctor, and you got all these great things you're doing, and you're here on this podcast. It's just amazing. But it's great to have you, by the way. It's wonderful.
Well, the answer is because I met Dr. John Stamey with a cannon.
Yes, tell us the journey. Yes. Okay.
I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but I'm active with Revolutionary War Reenactment Living History folks. We've got a nonprofit. If you care to visit the website, it is southerncampaign1780.org. And that organization does educational programs for revolutionary and colonial American history for school children. That's the nonprofit part of it, where we give the money away. And to generate the income, we have an annual Battle of Camden. I don't know if you know, but in 1780, a huge battle occurred in Camden, South Carolina, my hometown, where the British thrashed an American army that outnumbered the British 2-1. It was a huge loss for the Patriots. And we have Revolutionary War reenactments every year in the fall, second weekend of November this year, and we've been named a national event this year. So
that's one of the
things I do. So we were demonstrating a cannon, and this fellow walks up to me and he said, "Hey, can I get you guys to shoot a cannon for a guy that wants to have a pirate show?" And I said, "Of course we would." And that's how I met Dr. John Stamey. And, you know, John is around the state constantly, and we meet when we can for lunch. We always have great mastermind conversations. We talk about marketing. We talk about all sorts of social stuff. We talk about conspiracy theories. We just talk about what's going on in the pulse of the United States. And today the pulse is a little bit feverish, and it's on coronavirus. So that's how I met John. We've known each other for years, and he's a close friend.
Oh, that's tremendous. That's tremendous. I'm not done yet, Dr. John. I'm not done yet.
Okay.
Yes, he's not done. That was question one.
Don't cut me off.
No, sir.
I'll pull a flare promo on you. Don't cut me off. All right, here we go. A second part is compared what's going on now with other pandemics of the past, like the bubonic plague, for example, and others that have happened, and the way that's been handled somewhat, and been kind of reminiscent of how government and politics have kind of handled things in the past, if you will. What do you think we could learn from the past to help what we're going through now make it better and to the point where eventually we can beat this and move forward?
Well, that's a complicated question. So strap on your seatbelt and prepare for a complicated answer. First of all,
yes.
I have practiced medicine for over 30 years.
Right.
And I have learned to never underestimate the power of government to screw up healthcare. Never underestimate the power of government to screw up healthcare, because they do all sorts of bizarre things that to most practitioners of the health science are simply inexplicable. And they seem to work against us at cross purposes constantly. What other system of work would you have that you burden practitioners with huge, vast amounts of paperwork to justify billing based on the fact that, physicians, like anybody else, there are going to be some bad apples in the bunch? But rather than just treat the bad apples and really get them out of the system, they seem convinced that every doctor in the world is scheming to rip off Medicare. And that's frankly just not true. But that's another soapbox. So never underestimate the power of the federal government to screw up health care. If you want a perfect example, look right now at the distribution problems that are going on with this vaccine. At first there wasn't enough supply. There's still not enough supply. Then there are problems with distribution, and then there's problems with actually administration. Now, I'll tell a little story, kind of demonstrate this. We had a national chain pharmacy come to our nursing home that has nurses working at the nursing home, because that's where nurses work. And these nurses have been giving shots, immunizations, injections, forever. We probably have 1,000 man years of injection giving history among our nursing staff. But they get a pharmacy to bring in 3 people to administer vaccines. 2 people were on a computer, 2 computers the whole time. 1 person looked like they learned how to give an injection last week for the first time.
Oh, wow.
And had they just said, how many of your patients have consented to receive the vaccine? I mean, it's all by consent. People have choice, and you can choose to get it or not. Doesn't matter. How many of your nurses, how many of your staff, how many vaccines will you need? And then say, give them the number that they asked for. If you want to preload the syringes or whatever, just have it available. And then give it out to the nurses. And then the nurses would have them administered in about 45 minutes. And you're done. But that doesn't take into account the accounting, all the paperwork that you had to put in order to bill insurance companies to reimburse for it. It doesn't take into account all the tracking of the data, which is important. I'm not downplaying that, but wouldn't there be an easier way to do that? I mean, why do I fill out a piece of paper when I could do it online and then be given a barcode that they could scan and then you're done? I mean, if you really wanted to be efficient, I wouldn't even have the nurses do it. I'd go to Chick-fil-A and say, listen, we have like 300 million vaccines we want to give out. Can you help us out with that? And do you know what Chick-fil-A would say? My pleasure.
Right?
That's what they say. My pleasure. And, you'd have 4 people in a car. You'd roll the windows down at the same time. 4 people, 4 kids with clipboards and the red hat from Chick-fil-A, and the cow could be there just, And there's a reason the cow should be there. I'll tell you that in a minute. There's a reason the cow should be present. And you roll down the windows, you give the injection, you go park them in the empty parking lot next to Chick-fil-A. You say, stick around for 15 minutes. If anybody develops any kind of allergic kind of reaction, let us know. And then we'll take care of that. And then they drive home and they're okay. And they probably would have been able to distribute, I don't know, like maybe half of it in 2 weeks. It's just incredible. And I'm not saying I know how to do it better, but I know I know how to do it better than what we received in our little nursing home, because it was just ludicrous. Everybody standing around waiting. It was just stupid.
Oh, wow.
So, Maestro, I'm afraid I've forgotten the rest of your question. I got so carried away with my
Chick-fil-A
discussion.
No, you're doing great. Oh, man, it's amazing.
So the federal government is not – have you ever applied for the global travel what is it called? Global travel. You know how when you fly, if you're given the special dispensation with the TSA, you get the pre-check and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Well, my pre-check, TSA pre-check, expired. And then I found out, I could get a global entry card, which substitutes for the TSA, and it also expedites coming into the country when I used to travel outside of the country before COVID. So we got that. Well, I went on the website, and you have to schedule an appointment. And the closest appointment, I live in South Carolina, was Atlanta, Georgia. I could get an appointment in Atlanta. Well, that's like a four and a half hour drive to go for an interview, and it was scheduled every half an hour, and there was a slot. And I called up, I found an alternate number to call in Charlotte, which was another location, but they just didn't have any slots available. I called Charlotte, and they said, all our slots are filled right now, but on Thursday we're going to open up for more slots. So I called on Thursday, I set up an appointment, and I went and got it done. Otherwise, I'd have had to go to Atlanta. A friend of mine just had it done. And they said, how did it go? And they said, I had to go to Atlanta. And I said, well, you should just call back to Charlotte in a couple of days, and there'd be an opening, and then you could get it scheduled. The federal government is not used to scheduling appointments. When I did go to Charlotte to get the appointment, there was nobody there. Well, the personnel were there. And I said, because we got there early, because God knows you don't want to be late for that. Otherwise, it's like, well, you've missed the bus. And I said to him, listen, you just want to do this now? And they go, oh, no, we couldn't do it now. You are scheduled. I said, but there's nobody. Nope, we can't do that. So we went back in the appointed hour. We were there 15 minutes early. They asked us the same questions they did earlier in the day, because I guess they didn't remember we were there. And then our interview lasted all of 5 minutes for a half an hour slot. And then we got our cards. Is that efficient? No, it's not. So, again, the government is not built. Yeah, the government's not built for, as we put it when we worked in the ER, for chopping wood. They do not chop wood. We'd like them to chop wood, but that's not how they operate. So I'm not saying that I could have done any better of it, but I tell you, I would have made that call to Chick-fil-A early on. And that doesn't help, because then people get frustrated with, why can't they do this or that? Well, they're not used to doing it. It's all new for them. Today I read some article where they said that the Biden administration, I think the vice president said, we have to start from scratch. Well, then Dr. Fauci got on and says, we're not going to start from scratch. Of course you don't have to start from scratch. You can improve things as you go along. I mean, you get better as you go. But you're not going to start from scratch again, for crying out loud.
We're going to circle back to that.
Yes, and then and, you
back.
Know, you've got the media.
I can't get it.
You got the media in there, and the media feels with 24-hour news cycles, you've got to have new news, right? So they start recycling stuff that every medical student learned in medical school 30 years ago. And it's like, oh, it has to do with T cells. And then they didn't explain about T cell immunity. And it's like, this must be a novel breakthrough. And I said, no, I learned about this in medical school. I've forgotten it. I've forgotten about the T cell stuff, the details, but none of that was unfamiliar. So with the constant need for headlines and making people read news articles that usually have misspellings, it really doesn't give you a lot of faith in who you can believe, which brings me back to another point about what information sources do you choose to trust? And I only look at three constant sources. I look at Johns Hopkins, you perhaps people have heard of Johns Hopkins. They're smart doctors that are there. I look at the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, IHME, and that's from the University of Washington, and they have great statistics based on data that they have. But again, data that they have may or may not be valid, because when North Korea reports we don't have coronavirus, it kind of makes you think, maybe this isn't exactly accurate. John, as a computer science, you know garbage in, garbage out. So, you know, you got to take that with a grain of salt. And then every state will have.
And obviously, as we know, North Korea does not report anything. We don't know what's going on over there. I mean, you know, our spies do, but we don't know what's going on over there. And so I think you have to kind of like take whatever they say with not even a grain of salt. You just have to ignore it. And that's my opinion.
Yeah, like a truckload of salt. You know, I mean, obviously, every place in the world has been affected. This is a global pandemic, if people aren't clued into that. And then I look at the state website. You know, we have the Department of Health Environmental Control, DHEC, in South Carolina. Every state's going to have a health department website, which should be listing state information. So I like getting my resources directly from those survey organizations that, and even then, I'm sure there are affections of politics, just like you find in New York State with the flap that's going over to that, with whatever really happened. But it just depends on what data you input into that system. But I think those are the cleanest sources for data, and that way you're not depending on the hype from a reporter who reports on the sensational aspects of it. I saw again, this happens every time, somebody dies 15 minutes after they get a vaccine, and that's the headline, you know. Man dies 15 minutes after receiving a coronavirus vaccine. And then the first line of the article, health officials don't think the coronavirus vaccine had anything to do with their death. So why the headline? Well, because it's clickbait. And now it's a clickbait article. That's all it is. It's a legitimate clickbait article. When they refute what you were thinking when you read that article, because you said, aha, here's where the virus is, you know, the vaccine is more terrible than anything in the world because it's killing people. Well, no. I mean, maybe the guy got hit by a truck when he walked away from the clinic. I don't know. They don't tell why, but they do say, well, it's probably nothing to do with it. But that's after they wrote the headline that made you click on it, so they can count that as a positive click, because that's how things are measured in the internet world. So, Papa Stroh, I'm not sure if I answered your question, but I sure did have a fun time getting around to whatever I answered.
Oh, Chris Dahl. I mean, it was epic. It was amazing. Thank you so much. I loved it.
Yes, sir.
That was a good question and a good answer, I'll tell you that. And next up is going to be the Amazing Velvet, followed by Robin. So, Amazing Velvet, what question do you have for Dr. Trey?
I really don't have a question, but I do have a statement going along with some of the stuff he's already covered. Being that I'm high risk, I haven't been able to get on a list to get a vaccine, which, okay. I've talked to all of my doctors. All of them said, don't be in a hurry, you know, to get it. And one of my doctors said, he wouldn't even schedule it for me anyway. So I'm like, okay, y'all know best, whatever. Y'all, you know, figure out. So I'm like, whatever makes everybody happy, fine. I don't have a feeling either way about it. If they say, hey, you got to take it, I take it. If they say, I can hold off, like I didn't get a flu shot this year. They said the strand wasn't going to be as potent And I said, okay. And I didn't get a flu shot this year, so I didn't get the flu, knock on wood. I've pretty much stayed home. I've gone out here and there, but I haven't really done anything to be around people. So, you know, I'm just – I got radiation coming up next month, and then whenever that's done, I might have chemo, so I'll be on a six-month plan of that. So I don't know if they'll do it before, after, during, if they decide I need to get it. So I don't know. I don't even know what to say as far as that's concerned. Any anybody, either one of y'all, either doctor, have anything to comment about that? Because, I mean, is it that pertinent to get?
Well, Velvet,
not get.
You know, have you heard the medical theory of mind over matter?
Oh yeah.
I don't know if you've heard the same one I'm about to tell you. But when a doctor says, it's kind of up to you, it really doesn't matter, you know, whatever, do you get your vaccine? Because, you know, we were in the first group to get vaccinated. So that was the first question I'd ask. And the second one I'd ask, are you talking about mind over matter? And this is how it goes. I don't mind and you don't matter.
Gotcha.
No, but if you're going through radiation, that's for a serious problem. You need to be vaccinated. Now, does that mean that you are at higher risk? You're at higher risk for everything. Does that mean you're going to die if you get COVID, even if you have a serious illness going on? We don't know. But if you fall simply into those age categories, are you in the 0.5 risk? Are you in the 5.4 risk? If you're in the 0.02 risk, I'd say, well, you know, it probably doesn't matter too much. But, again, it depends on the answer. And I would think that you would have the answer customized to at least the age risk. But if you have a compromised immune system, and if you're going to be having radiation, that usually compromises your immune system to a degree, some more than others.
Right.
Chemotherapy compromises your immune system. It can knock your white count down. I mean, just bald-faced, it'll knock down your ability to resist infection. And people that have had chemotherapy that, I mean, if you have hormonal therapy, that's different. But if you have chemotherapy, that's going to knock your immune system down. So if you haven't started that yet, now I'm not giving you medical advice because my malpractice covers working with older patients in nursing homes and not just giving general advice, but yeah, I'd find a place to vaccinate you. Now, let me tell you one of the little dirty secrets of this is that you've got all this stockpiled vaccine, and they might be withholding it for second doses or whatever, or they go to a nursing home or they go to a hospital and they're making it available, and all of a sudden they got leftovers. And if they don't use the vaccine they got, they might not get the vaccine the next time they ask for it, or they'll get a diminished amount. And you don't want to do that. So what you do is you call around. You call around distribution centers. You say, hey, you know, I'm about to go through chemotherapy. I can bring you something from my doctor if you want, but I'm about to go through chemotherapy. I'd like to get immunized before I start all this. And is there a possibility that there's a waiting list? If you have excess vaccine, could I just show up? You give me a call. You can give me a call 2 hours before. I can be there. You call me at noon, I'll be there by 2. I can get my vaccine. Or if you want, I'll schedule in advance. We've had that in South Carolina where they've had excess vaccine. They don't want it to die on the shelf, so they've opened it up. Now, I will also tell you that when they've done that, the window of opportunity is pretty short because they'll slam it shut, or they'll slam it shut for this week, but they'll say, why don't you call back Wednesday, and then we'll know what we're going to do for the rest of the week. So you get on that phone on Wednesday, and you keep dialing until you get a hold of somebody who says, no, don't come in. Then you don't come in, but you just keep calling the next time they give you that opportunity. That's what I would do. but and that's what I've advised a couple of friends of mine, and some of them have been able to get through and get the vaccine because you do not want that vaccine to go to waste on the shelves, and nobody in the healthcare business wants to waste that vaccine, not just because it's stupid, but because it might prohibit their chances of getting a full order of vaccine the next time if they can't show to the government that, yes, you know, we ordered 1,000 doses and we gave them all out. That's what the government wants. They want to make sure that it's in somebody's arm and not on a shelf. So that would be my advice to you.
Okay.
And one of the reasons you didn't get the flu this year is because of the same reason. I haven't had a cold since March. Because I just haven't been hanging out with people. When Dr. John comes visiting, we usually pick up something at McDonald's. We go outside on a picnic table. He sits on one end. I sit on the other end. I've had conversations with people in trucks. I'm in my truck. We park like police do, you know, so the driver's doors
are
next to each other. We roll the windows down. There are about 4 feet of separation between the windows. We're basically outdoors, except we're not freezing because we got the heat on in the vehicles. You have lunch with somebody. That's why I haven't had a cold. I always have at least two colds a year, and I haven't had anything because I haven't been hanging out with people.
Exactly.
So it's not because your immune system's cranked up and ready to resist the flu. It's just that the flu is not as transmissible, and it's not nearly as deadly. The last statistic I read was that you're 3.5 times more likely to die of flu than you are of you're 3.5 times more likely to die of COVID than you are influenza. But now I can tell you in my nursing home experience, when influenza comes through, it usually takes out some patients. But this year, people are very good about things like wearing masks. Kentucky Fried Chicken our Kentucky Fried Chicken said that there's no more salad bar. Gone. Never going to come back. There's no more, you know, all you can eat fried food buffet because you got people in contact with that food, breathing on it, that kind of thing. Sneeze screens is not enough. So a lot of the way people are conducting their business today is technically a lot more sanitary and how they should have been doing it all along. And I think people will get less flu and transmissible diseases than they would ordinarily. Because you're actually doing things that work from a public health perspective. You're not doing it, well, you're doing it because of COVID, but that's not the end result is you're getting better results from public health measures rather than anything else to do with the seasonal diseases.
Well put, sir. Velvet, do you have any more questions or do we move on to Robin?
We can move on to Robin.
All right. Well, thank you for your questions. Robin, it's always good to have you here, and you're the queen of ScaryCast. Do you have any questions for Dr. Trey?
Hey, Dr. Trey. Always glad to have you
here.
Hey,
Robin.
I love listening to you because you're just like this fountain of knowledge. My question is this. What is the difference, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong, so I'm apologizing ahead of time. Is it Moderna that is one and then Pfizer is the other one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what is the difference in those two? Because I tend to notice with the Pfizer, when people take the Pfizer, they don't have as many reactions as the other.
I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. They both were developed kind of using similar pathways. This mRNA, and if you ask me the questions like, well, exactly how does that work? I'll say, I don't know, because I'm not a virologist. And in this instance, I think people have to understand that when you're getting opinion from someone who is not truly expert at it, two things. One, you might not be getting the right story if the person pretends to know more than they really do. Or if they simplify it, you're not getting the right story. Like, what do you do for a living? Robin?
Myself? I'm disabled. I can't work.
Well, okay, when you were working, what did you do?
I was a mortgage broker.
Okay, perfect, perfect. When you have to explain how mortgages work and how payments work, and should I get a 15 or a 30-year mortgage, or could I get kind of a hybrid? Could I get like a 20-year mortgage, or when I have to pay down points, or, well, wait a minute, if I didn't put down enough of a down payment, don't I have to pay extra insurance? How does all that work? And your answer is going to be, it depends, right?
And yeah, I mean, it depends on what they want to do.
Did you ever simplify something to explain to somebody who wouldn't have your in-depth knowledge of how mortgage brokering works?
Yeah, you have to go down.
And then when they leave your office, if you gave them a quiz on the material you gave them, how many people would pass that quiz? Now, I'm not saying on your knowledge, but on the knowledge you think you have told them. Because, you know, I've explained informed consent to people, which is what you do for anything, you know. And the informed consent always involves the risk of bleeding, death, and dying. I mean, always.
Yeah.
If I remove your hangnail, you know, you could get an infection, you could die. Or if I do open heart surgery on you, you could get an infection and you could die. It's just like, it's in that contract. It's always there. And then you explain other things. And then when the patient walks out of the room, especially males, I don't get it, but especially males, they have to bring their wives in with them on the doctor visit. Why?
Yeah.
Because when the wife is not in there and the patient goes back outside and the wife says, well, what did he say? And the guy will go, I'm in an operation. And they go, oh, yeah, you know, this is why we came to the surgeon. You're referred to the surgeon. What kind of operation? You go, I don't know. This is some kind of operation. He said it'd be okay. And that's it. So when you listen to someone explain something that is complex, such as virology or how mortgages work, it's gonna play the telephone game. It's not gonna be transmitted exactly like you thought it was transmitted, even though you can show a tape recording of people. This is the thing about informed consent. I can show a tape recording, a video of me saying, you know, you could die from this, and then you ask them 2 weeks later, do you think you could die from this? They go, oh no, he said it'd be simple, it'd be easy. Well, he didn't say you could die from it? Oh, no, he never said that. Well, of course you do, because you always say that. But they're not going to remember that. So I think a lot of this, when you're listening to advice, make sure you know the level of expertise. And even if you have somebody that is truly an expert, like a virologist who's been working in the field for 40 years, who knows virology and immunology backwards and forwards and can name every component, when they transmit it to you, they're going to simplify it because you can't gain 40 years of knowledge in a 5-minute conversation when you see your doctor. So that's a big part of the problem, and that's just an information exchange, not even the differences between one vaccine and another. And you really won't know the difference between the Moderna or the Pfizer or the AstraZeneca or whatever other one's going to come down the pike. You know, some of them are single dose, some of them are multiple dose.
How many do they have to take? Because, like, my brother-in-law, he does land development for one of the hospitals in Traverse City, Michigan. And,
yes,
of course, they made everybody have them there.
Yeah.
And they made him take three.
Three?
He got three of them. And then another person I know, they did it twice. And I was like, it made no sense to me.
Well, the two that have been approved for emergency use in the U.S. are two vaccinations. One of them you get once and then you wait 3 weeks, and the other one, the Moderna one, you wait 4 weeks. And again, it's not like, oh, if you miss it, is it going to screw you up? Because that's what they initially thought. or that's what the press initially reported. But now it's obvious, and it was obvious at the time that they made that erroneous statement that, you know, you have to get it in 3 weeks. No, it can be 3, 4, 5, 6. It could be a month. It could be 2 months. Because all it's doing is it's a booster. It's potentiating what you first had. So those are the two available for emergency use now, but I can't remember the names of the other ones, but they're coming out with some. I think the Johnson & Johnson one is a one-shot deal. So it depends on which one you get, and whichever one you do get, you should get the same one for the second time because it potentiates what the first one started. Well, the second one may be enough different so it won't potentiate it as well as it would if it was the same one. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, I appreciate that. The other thing was, too, I've heard several different accounts of, you know, is this free to everybody because of it? It's a pandemic, or is this something that you pay for or your insurance covers? I mean, what about the people with no income and no insurance? Are they able to get this if it's needed?
From what I could see from the form I had to fill out to get my own personal experience, if you have I've got Medicare. That's brand new this year, so it was great tapping into the tit of the federal government for a good long suck. So I got that for free, but they wanted my secondary insurance, and they'll process all that and they'll bill for that, but I won't have to pay anything, even if there's a copay, from my understanding. If you do not have insurance, there was a place where you wrote down on the form, I do not have insurance, and you sign your name to document the fact that you don't have an insurance, and then it would be provided free.
Oh, okay.
So it is at no cost. I guess the government's underwriting that. But of course they're gonna collect from an insurance company whenever they can, because that pays for the work they're doing. But now that third vaccine, I don't really understand. Now, I did see a patient get 3 vaccines in my brief experience with this national pharmacy that gave us our vaccines in the nursing home. The first vaccine was placed in the arm of the patient, and they waited a month, and when they came back, they tried to administer a second dose by someone who maybe learned the week before how to give an injection. And when they pushed the plunger down, it squirted vaccine all over her external arm because they didn't have the needle tightened onto the lure lock of the syringe.
Jeez.
Now, that does not instill confidence in the vaccinator.
No, God, no.
So they pulled the needle out, and then they gave her another intramuscular injection like you would expect a vaccine to be given. I don't think it calls for topical application of vaccine on the arm of the skin of the arm of the vaccinatee.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know why he would have had 3 doses. I mean, we can speculate. He got in the wrong line. The person didn't know to ask him whether he'd already received a second dose and thought they were doing what they were supposed to do. Maybe they were giving saline out for the second one and they didn't want to admit it, and they decided to give them the real vaccine for a change. I don't know. You know, you can speculate all day long, which again leads to all these conspiracy theories, because there's unknowns and people like answers. And in medicine, there are problems. There are problems that will arise. And we have specific words that we use. And we use them in Latin because it's always more erudite to speak to a patient in Latin. For instance, if you have a problem and you go to see your doctor and he says, well, it's idiopathic whatever syndrome, would that satisfy most people? Sure. You know, sure, it was idiopathic something. You know what idiopathic means?
No, it what does that mean?
Idiopathic means we don't know.
Now, Dr. Trey, you and I were talking earlier today, and you taught me a great phrase that a doctor would use if they don't know what another doctor did wrong. Do you mind sharing that with us? It was the coolest thing in the world.
Sure, that's another little bit of Latin, because Latin is impressive. It means your doctor is educated and can speak Latin. And, you know, it used to be a requirement to be in the medical school to be able to speak Latin. It is no longer, because you learn the stuff as you go. But idiopathic means we don't know. But it's a lot better for a patient to hear the word idiopathic than to hear I don't know. I don't know doesn't instill confidence. Idiopathic means, oh, my doctor's smart. The other one you got to watch out for is iatrogenic. So if it's an iatrogenic problem, do you know what that means? That means doctor-induced. So if you had an idiopathic pneumothorax after somebody gave you a subclavian catheter to get good IV access, that means they accidentally poked a hole in your lung, you had a collapse to your lung, and it was the doctor that did it. But it's a lot better if you say it was an idiopathic pneumothorax, because then it sounds better. If you really want to get really good, you'd say it was iatrogenesis imperfectus profundi, which basically means really, really deep screw up by the doctor. But iatrogenic imperfectus profundi just sounds like the doctor knows what he's talking about. So you got to watch out for doctors. We're full of those little tricky phrases. You'll also find that a lot of times dermatologists and ophthalmologists use a lot of Latin in their words. When you fill out a prescription, you don't say right eye, left eye. You call it sinister or dexter, because that's what the Latin is. It makes no difference, but it looks a lot cooler when you write it on a prescription if you use the Latin abbreviation for right or left eye. Because, again, you don't understand it. It's like a code. So if the doctor's writing with cool stuff like that, they're going to be smarter than they really are. They're going to appear smarter. Robin, I forgot
gotcha.
Where we were going with that question. I hope I answered it.
You did. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, Trey. You have been a lot of fun to have here on the show. And we certainly appreciate all of your erudition, which is a nice word for saying your smartness. We appreciate your erudition for talking about COVID, because you might have clarified a lot of things, and I guess I have already asked you and you already accepted, but just wanted to confirm. Would you like to start back with us next week as one of our co-hosts?
I absolutely would. I think it'll be a lot of fun, John. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You're welcome. And all I've got to say is we've had a lot of fun. Now, does anybody else, if you got a question for Dr. Trey Donaway about COVID, about the truth, the lies, and the conspiracy theories, ask away right now. Please ask a question, because we don't always have access to one of the most knowledgeable people. And I know, it's funny. Trey says to me, John, I'm not knowledgeable. I'm a surgeon. I do this. Trey, you're as knowledgeable as anybody we could ever have, and we appreciate you being with us. So does anybody else have a question?
I have a question. This is Devin here.
Thanks, Devin.
So I know a lot of people are getting their vaccines, but we've been still urged to follow the public health guidelines of, social distancing and wearing a mask. I'm just curious, what percentage of people need to be vaccinated before it would be safe to kind of start getting lax on those? I still might wear a mask even when I ride the subway in the future, no matter what. But, to what degree should we be vigilant about those measures as we move forward?
Well you got to realize, you've noticed we've had a big national drop in infection rate, right? I mean, that's, it's great news. But only like a small percentage of the population has received two vaccines. A little larger group of the population has received one vaccine. So a lot of the reason why we don't see the spike in infection is because there's not the travel there was in the holidays. People aren't indoors with other people being crowded. You know, you want to avoid places like a bar where people drink and they're loud and they're crammed in next to each other and they're usually louder than they might normally be. And when you're loud, this is something about the masks and crowds and all this. People will say, well, if you wear a regular mask, viruses can get through the regular mask. Absolutely, 100%, no doubt about it. That is not protecting you as much as like an N95 mask. But then again, if you have a beard and you're wearing an N95 mask, you might as well not be wearing the N95 mask because it's your breath is coming in and out of your beard, which does not obstruct anything. Certainly, I mean, it obstructs nothing. It'll all be filtered through your beard, but a virus can get through that easily. But the question is why are you wearing a mask and why you should still continue to wear a mask? Well, even for me, I still wear a mask. And I wear a mask for a number of reasons. One, it's good to see other people wearing masks, so I don't want to be not wearing a mask in front of other people. Two, I've only got 95% immunity, according to the statistics, so I could have COVID. Or I could have COVID and be completely asymptomatic, just like anybody else. And am I transmitting it? So I wear a mask now, not so much for me. Now, the beginning of the pandemic, I was wearing a mask for me. I didn't have a beard, and I wasn't going to have a beard because I wanted that mask to fit on my face, so I was breathing filtered air, which would keep the viruses out of me. But at this point, I'm wearing a mask because while virus can be transmitted from me, the distance a virus is transmitted, and the virus can go off in a cloud and it's real tiny little particles, and you know, we all know that. But the reason you wear a mask is because if you sneeze, even if you've talked to somebody and spit on them, haven't you? At some point, accidentally. I mean, you're not spitting at people, but you know what I mean. You're talking and all of a sudden you're going to give somebody a little brief shower from your mouth. Well, that means that you are transmitting that virus. It could be in feet. Well, if you're wearing a mask, you take that transmission diameter from feet to a matter of an inch or two. So if you are transmitting virus, your virus load is not going to go as far, which means it has less of a risk to other people. So you wear a mask to protect other people and or yourself. At this point, I feel like even if I get COVID, I hope I would just become regular ill and not lethal ill, because again, we don't exactly know why some people are susceptible more than others and why some people die and some people hardly are sick. We don't know. And we're not going to know until it's studied for a while. So yes, continue to wear a mask because it's protecting other people. It sets a good example. Social distancing is a good thing. And, you know, I hear people complaining about the mask because obviously recently it's been politicized. Well, you know, that's just the most moronic thing I've ever heard in my life. And for the person who just absolutely refuses to have their personal rights trampled by feeling obliged to wear a mask, and if you walk into a building and they say, "I'm sorry, sir, but you have to be wearing a mask," and you make a big deal about it, "Well, I don't have a mask," or whatever, and you say you're infringing on my rights to live the life I want to live. Well, yeah. Sure. Just remember, the next time you go to the operating room for something, look at your surgeon before you go into the operating room, and you just make sure you say, "Doctor, you know, I really feel bad that you think you have to wear a mask, which when you're working on me, because I am infringing on your rights to express yourself as you see fit. And just for this operation, just take the day off from the mask. Don't wear a mask. It's okay. I give you permission to operate on me. In fact, everyone in the operating room doesn't have to wear a mask. because I don't want to trample on your rights. How many people want to go to that surgeon not wearing a mask? No, it's just stupid. Wear a mask.
I like my mom's idea. My mom's idea is she's going to get a T-shirt that says, wear a mask because my life matters.
Exactly.
And you know, it is. You know, they're not comfortable. They bother my face like it breaks my skin out. But I do it not just for myself, but because there are other people around me. Not only do they feel uncomfortable when I don't wear a mask, it leaves them open.
Yeah,
get out of that mindset of it's about you.
Yeah, do you go into a theater and stand up and yell fire because it's your right? You have freedom of speech? No, you don't do that. There are laws against that. But and I'm not saying we need laws to keep, but it's just common decency. Just wear a mask. It's not going to kill you.
Exactly.
At least I don't think it will. I'm sure though, I'm just waiting for that headline. Man puts on mask for first time and is in dead 15 minutes later. You know that,
yeah.
And they're going to have that headline. But it's just it's working. Screw it up. That's the simple thing. We're going the right way. Don't screw it up. As soon as you keep your eye off, as soon as you stop looking at the ball that you're about to hit with a baseball bat, you're not going to hit it. You're going to lose it. So keep your eye on the ball. Understand that this is a temporary measure. Although, like I said, with restaurants, I think there are going to be some significant changes in the future. I think the buffet is an animal of the past, at least until things have cleaned up or they come up with other technologies. But in the meantime, it's so simple. Wear a mask. If you feel like it's trampling your rights, then
stay home.
Go out in the middle of a field, stand by yourself, and then don't wear the mask. Then you'd be out standing in your field. So, you know, that's okay. But if you're going to be around other people, wear a mask. Does it infringe your rights not to smoke in a restaurant with other people? We've gone through that debate before. And most places have voted to have non-smoking inside restaurants. You can't smoke on an airliner. And if you go into the bathroom and smoke, you're going to get in trouble. So it's the same thing. There are certain freedoms that we are given, but you don't take advantage of other people's freedom. If you look at John Locke's explanation of freedom, it's not freedom, it's liberty. And liberty translates, to flip back to the 18th century, it translates meaning freedom with responsibility. You are not allowed to take someone else's liberty as part of your ability to have liberty. John Locke.
Yep.
That's what formed the foundational elements of the American way of thinking of democracy and the republic that we have. And that was all translated from John Locke. And then that's how the founders of our country thought about liberty, different than freedom. So wearing a mask is it's a compression of your freedom, but it is liberty for all. That's what it's about.
That's a very brilliant thing to say, Trey, and thank you so much. And all I've got to say is if anyone else has any more questions, let us know. Otherwise, we certainly appreciate your time tonight to talk about COVID, truth, lies, and conspiracy. And we look forward to having you next week as just one of our regular panelists, and we're going to have a lot of fun. So I got to say thank you very much. And as Papa Stroh has always taught us, we've got to go around and let everyone give our plugs. So, Papa Stroh, I'm going to let you start first. What have you got to plug for tonight?
Well, tomorrow night in the room on VOCNation.com and Thursday night WCW Retro at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on VOCNation.com and Friday night at midnight Eastern Standard Time on my official Facebook page, facebook.com/StrohTheMaestro. Will be another edition of my horror sci-fi show, The Stroh Zone, and this Friday night's feature will be Diary of a Madman starring Vincent Price. So please tune in. Thank you.
What an absolutely great, great horror film to have. Velvet, the amazing Velvet from Ravenel, South Carolina. What have you got to plug?
Every Sunday, especially this Sunday, 9 p.m., Pro Wrestling Interviews, working on a great guy for this weekend, Patrick Kelvey, a.k.a. Rick McCord, from the NWA and some other regional areas, to be on the show, working on that. If he can come this weekend, he'll be there. If not, we'll book him for another time. And Devin, I don't know how to get a hold of you, so if you can look up The Amazing Velvet on Facebook, please drop your stuff there so I can get a hold of you.
Certainly. Thank you.
Hey, Velvet, I'll make sure tomorrow that you know how to get in touch with Devin for sure, okay?
Okay, cool. That works.
All right, great. Now, Devin, what do you have to promote?
Well, thanks, John. I'm not currently really promoting anything, but I did just want to take a moment to pay tribute to a friend of mine who passed last weekend. Her name was Amy Crosby, and she was the lead singer of my former band that I was in for about 10 years. We were called Shitting Glitter. So that's just spelled just how it sounds, Shitting Glitter.
Nice.
And if you want to look up Shitting Glitter on YouTube or, you know, streaming services, our music and videos are there. And, you know, but just, I know she would love to have people still remembering her for her music.
That's great. Thank you for that. And please remember her. I will say this before I ask Robin, because several of us have a mutual friend, Angelia Shear, who passed away this past week. Papa Stroh, Robin, and I, and I have put in a call to Dale, who was her husband, and we're going to try to do a memorial service for her at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, which I can go ahead and announce is going to be October 16th and 17th. At Bays Mountain Park. Now, assuming we are able to have it, but anyway, the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference will be in honor of Angelia Shear, and Dale, her husband, will be there with us, assuming everything works out. So that's all I've got to say. Robin, what do you have to promote?
Well, it's not really a promotion of any kind, other than I just wanted to point out that, you know, these are really trying times. Between sickness
yes.
and finances and weather. And it's a very difficult time. And I don't think that even people that have money or don't have money, I don't think we escape the fact that it is a hard time right now. I just implore people, use a little bit more compassion. You know, if you see somebody in need and you can do it, help them. This world just does not base its beliefs anymore on compassion and helping and caring for each other. And I just, you know, I implore people, think about that a little bit more, especially in the times that we have right now.
That's a wonderful thing to say. We really appreciate that. And Dr. Trey Donaway, what do you have to say? What kind of promotion do you have tonight?
I really don't have much of a promotion, but I did want to just give Maestro, you asked specifically about historic epidemics and how COVID ranks with those historic epidemics. If you're truly interested, I did a series of podcasts for History Man. You can find these podcasts at E.K. Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S. So that's like Echo Kilo Barnes.com. Or you can look it up on Podbeans, which is Spotify's podcasting service, or iHeartRadio under History Man. And I did a series of, I think there are five podcasts, 15-minute segments, talking about smallpox and its effect mm-hmm. and the ravages in the 18th century and how this – and there are a lot of parallels because it's, again, a respiratory-transmitted virus – same as COVID. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of parallels. So if you wanted to get kind of a historical perspective, you might want to check out those podcasts. Eric Barnes is a friend, and I did those podcasts for him, and ekbarnes.com or History Man Podcasts on iHeartRadio and Podbeans. Spotify's version of podcast. But, you know, if you've got an hour and 15 minutes you want to kill, you can listen to those five podcasts and you can learn a little bit about smallpox. And that's truly the big worldwide killer for infectious disease and the parallels that we can see today, a lot of which the same public health measures are still working because it's a respiratory transmitted virus. So just a little more information.
Yeah, I sure will. Thank you.
Who might be interested in that? Yes, sir.
All right. Well, I'm gonna ask this, Trey. If you can shoot me a text with that information, I'll make sure that I get that right back to Papa Stro. How's that?
Sure, that'd be fine.
All right. Well, good. Well, thank you very much. I want to thank everybody for being on here tonight. It's been a lot of fun. We've had a great guest who will no longer be a guest next week. He's just going to be one of our camaraderie guys, and we're excited to have you, Papa, Papa Stro. We love you, of course. But Trey, we're excited to have you with us starting next week as a co-host. We're all going to have a great time. Thanks, because we've talked about COVID, we've talked about truth, lies, and conspiracies, and thank you so much for your knowledge, for your time, and everything. So we'll see everybody next week on the one and only ScaryCast, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And thanks a lot to everybody. We really appreciate you being with us and enjoy it and share this podcast. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night. Good night.
Au revoir.